feel bad because anybody just tuning in right now to listen to us as we are live from the Clevelander here in beautiful downtown Cleveland ahead of the opener. I think people have heard this take now three times this week, so I'm not breaking any ground here before we get into the JB Bickerstaff revenge game. How I'm looking at the Cavs, they are just the low commitment, fun, good time Charlie rebound that is an extension of what I think the Guardians were for a lot of us, where I can just watch it without living and dying with every moment because it's fun. You know they're a talented team, and we don't have to ask ourselves big questions until, like, January. I think they're the perfect palate cleanser for this craptastic Brown season.
I mean, it really is getting started at the right time, right? Like, you had the nice transition. Like, the Guardians made it out of the ALDS round, and so they kind of extended their postseason run, and then that ends in unceremoniously last weekend. But then you have a couple days where you have to think about the Browns, and then it's right back into the next team. I agree. Like, it's the season's starting at the right time. It feels like this is palate cleanser is probably a good phrase for it, but it's a nice kind of distraction from everything else going on with the Browns right now at a time of year where I don't want to say, like, I think people get excited for the Cavs to start up every year. Obviously, when LeBron was here, it was a different feeling. But, like, this time of year, you're still sort of locked into Brown season with the understanding that the Cavs are there. I think this year it's completely reversed. I think it's like, hey, I'm going to turn the Cavs on and watch from, like, game one on because I need something else to occupy my sports time. And on the flip side of that, I think it's kind of more like, yeah, the Browns are still there too, and I might turn them on when they're on certain days.
What's funny about it is I also think the fact that this is the JB Bickerstaff revenge game, I actually kind of think it's a good tempo set because I think you get it out of the way early, and I just don't think there's any ill will. Like, I was the guy that was like, all right, let's get this Joker out of here, and I'm happy to see him back. Like, I'm happy he landed on his feet. I wish he would have chosen a better job than the Detroit Pistons, but like even tonight, like, this doesn't come with, like, the weight of a coach or GM or any sort of revenge game that we hate. You know what I mean? This is, oh, we're going to see an old friend, and you're probably going to beat him by 30 points, and, you know, it'll be cool to see JB and know he's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've kind of pondered whether or not he was going to, what type of reception he was going to receive in this game tonight. Well, I mean, it's interesting because, like, I understand fans were fed up with him at the end of last season and they just didn't think he was the man for the job to the point where
I am the fan.
Well, yeah, it wasn't just you. I heard an entire I guess you could say maybe most of the arena boo him during the announcing of the starting lineups and the coach in his last appearance in this arena. Like, during the playoffs, he was getting booed by the fans when they announced his name. Like, that tells you that they were that it was maybe you were one of the more vocal ones about it, Nick. But people were fed up with JB during the playoffs last year, and just kind of where they felt like they have exhausted the potential of where this team could go under him. And I understand why, but I do think, like, I can't look back on his era, even if it ended in a way that we felt like he wasn't, you know, getting the most out of this team, and you know, you had tapped into everything you possibly could with him. There was no resources left in that way. I don't look back and feel any sort of negativity about the way JB coached here. And he was the perfect coach to get you to the stage where, okay, you were a rebuilding team, you had all these young players, and now where do they go from here? Okay, now you have a new coach who's supposed to take them to the next level. And I think that had been talked about for several years, that he was kind of the coach to get you to the coach. And that's okay. Like, he didn't have to be the guy that wins you a championship. I think we can look back fondly, and I hope that he gets a good reception tonight. I think he should,
you know,
and I think he will. But again, it's hard to know with Cleveland fans, given how the last week's gone.
What's interesting about what we're talking about with this, though, is I think it makes tonight so much easier that Kenny Atkinson in one game looked like he answered every criticism I had of JB. Whether it was Evan Mobley and Evan taking ownership, whether it was spacing by virtue of a system, whether it was even like a lack of rigidity with the lineup and rotations. Like, some of this is, if in any way Wednesday's game had set me off with any of the old cliches, I probably wouldn't be in as good of much mood. But that first game was so dominating, and it really did. Like, everything that I had spent 6 months saying, these are the things JB isn't doing, Kenny Atkinson did in game one, so I can feel good about Kenny. And here's the other part of it. I don't really have any fear of JB doing something. I think he walked into the worst situation in the NBA. And I think they have some talent. I don't think they have the ways to get dramatically better. And so even if he does end up making us regret, let's say he gets the Pistons and within the next 3 or 4 years, they're really, really good and they challenge you. Maybe they're even better than the Cavs. It's going to take so long to get there that by the time it gets there, the Cavs hopefully have kind of resolved their side of the street to where they've had enough success where there's no bitterness there and no like, oh, should we have kept him because this thing has gone so well.
Yeah, I mean, the Pistons are looking for him to do what he did here for sure. I like that you bring up the first game and what Kenny Atkinson showed you. It would be sort of – it wouldn't have been a good look if he shows up in town back in July, or I guess it was the end of June, and he's like sitting there hyping up how much he's going to use Evan Mobley and what this offense is going to look like and how excited he is about Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley and all these different guys. And then he comes out and just runs the exact same style of offense that J.B. Bickerstaff did. Like, that would have been a truly, like, fall
on your – We call that the Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, that would have been, like, fall on your face type moment to start the season.
I spent 6 months in my barn learning analytics. And then day one, what are analytics? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, that would have been not good for him and not good way to start. So I agree with you. Like, the fact that he came out and basically kept his promise as to what he was trying to do, especially when it comes to Evan Mobley – I think it should give people reason to be excited about this team, about what the potential of this team is. And I think that's honestly one of the bigger questions for this group now is Evan Mobley the thing that is unlocking him, that next level of his game like Kenny Atkinson is trying to do? Is that the thing the Cavs are missing to take that next step?
So I do want to get into that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah.
And I actually want to get it right ahead of Fedor at 4:40 because I think it's going to dovetail perfectly into our conversation with Chris. But, like, just to bring it back to the JB revenge game, homecoming, whatever you want to call it, it's a revenge game, right? Like, JB wants to win this simply to stick it in their arm,
right? They're going to have a video for him, by the way.
Yeah,
I was talking about this the other day. I understood why they did, like, videos for LeBron when he came back and Kyrie, even though he, like, skipped the first, like, 10 times he came back and they finally were able to play this video. They dusted off the tape of this video they were going to finally run to honor him. And even Kevin Love when he came back once he was with the Heat. Like, I understood the three, like, figures of that team. I even kind of understand, like, Ty Lue. But, like, have we gone too far with the tribute videos at this point where it's like they're doing it for everybody?
No, see, this is where
you left for
me.
Charlotte, and if you had come back, like, first Cavs game back,
yeah,
and you were in town, they could have played a tribute video for Nick Wilson.
Yeah, where was that?
Yeah,
all three teams could have done it. All three teams, and nobody did it.
I'm surprised they didn't, like, extend it to that level because it's getting a little ridiculous with these tribute videos.
But see, that I think what you're speaking to is the ridiculousness of ring culture, that the only thing that should be celebrated in the pantheon of a team's history and the entire arc is, did you win a championship? And that's just not how fans work. Like, I don't want that to be how fans work. Like, does the – like 25 years now, should we not have a day where we celebrate the 2024 Guardians because, well, they didn't win a ring? Or, like, do we not celebrate the 90s team? Now, those are teams that actually made the playoffs.
So,
like,
Stephen Vogt coaches this team, like, 10 years, but they never get past the eight. Like, the farthest they ever get is the ALCS. Then he comes back 10 years later, and we just play a tribute video for him. Like, hey, good job on all those appearances.
You're waiting a tribute video. Like, it takes some intern 15 minutes to put together. It takes 60 seconds.
Okay, that takes a lot longer than
you think. Their whizzes. They're super talented.
I guess for a coach, it might not take very long because it's just shots of them, like, pointing and screaming and, like,
well,
putting
clapping,
their hands up and clapping along the sideline.
Clapping.
And, like, tap, like, sell, you know, high-fiving guys as they come back to the bench.
Why would it be a bad thing if they put out a video?
It's not that,
like,
it's a JB, bad thing. Like, I just look, think, like –
like,
I,
JB
I
did thing that, like, Randy Whitman never did, John Lucas never did. Like, look to all the coaches that we had. And, by the way, you can go back before Lenny
Wilkins. So does Byron Scott get a video?
Because
he coached here at one point?
He never made it to the playoffs. Like, JB – covered a 5-year rebuild. You're being very dismissive. I'm so surprised. As the cynical person at the station, I'm surprised that the guy sitting across from me is doing this. But why wouldn't you celebrate what JB accomplished?
I'm not saying, but you can celebrate what he accomplished by, like, having a moment where you when you announce his name in the starting lineup, be like, J.B. Bickerstaff, and everyone stands up and gives him a round of applause, and it's like honoring, like, hey, thanks for all you did here.
What's
you
the
don't have to play a tribute video.
Why does a tribute video matter that much? You're acting like...
Because I just think there's certain levels of, like, you mentioned how the intern taking time to put it together. What is the level of what you did here that it takes to actually warrant somebody sitting down to put together that video?
I mean, I think JB's on the lower end of it, but, like, it's two playoff appearances. They built... I mean, think about this. Think about how many teams...
So if he had lost in the first round to the Magic last year and things had really... if it had really gone out sour on him, does he still deserve a tribute video then?
They won a playoff series. They went to the playoffs two straight years.
I'm just saying, if you lose
to
Orlando,
the last 2 years they won 99 regular season games.
I'm just saying, if he loses to Orlando last year in the playoffs, it becomes your two playoff appearances are you got gentlemen swept by the Knicks and they embarrassed you, and then you lose to a team that you lost in the end of the regular season to get on your schedule so you can play them in the playoffs.
They didn't. You're doing. You're like.
So
you're,
the
you're weaponizing
between, okay,
his success
so
and then
the difference
diminishing
between
it.
Tribute video and not is if you win
no, that's
the first
not what
of the playoffs at least one time.
That is not what I
you
said.
You get a tribute video.
You are being very derivative right now, and I just wanted to say the word derivative. No, I listen. I'm not saying you have to give the man, like, a plaque or, like, raise his number in the banners, but you can say, like, hey.
Let's just do it like the Indianapolis Colts. Two playoff appearances, J.B. Bickerstaff. Up to the Raptors.
Spencer is drinking Haterade. Will you boo J.B. Bickerstaff today, or will you cheer an injury if he, like, blew out an Achilles? Maybe we'll put it that way. But as we continue on.
Put him up there with Nate Thurman.
Do you want – that man went to Bowling Green. He is an Ivy Leaguer, and
hey,
I will fight you.
Don't look at me. Lima is the president of the take Nate Thurman's number
well,
down.
Well, I'm looking at the VP, and I got something to say about that. Does J.B. Bickerstaff deserve a video tribute tonight, or should they just go ahead and ignore?
Enough.
No. I want all or nothing. Should they not even say his name over the speakers?